But, well, he discussed generalized complex geometry from a mathematical point of view. I'll focus on the physical applications. So first I'll formulate some problems, some natural physical problems, solutions of which involve generalized complex geometry. And the first problem is pretty simple. So recall that given a Riemannian manifold M with a metric G and a B field, one can construct a classical field theory called N equals 1 supersymmetric sigma model, or more precisely, N equals 1, 1 sigma model. So a B field, well, it's clear what metric is. B field is a somewhat complicated thing. On the most basic level, well, usually one says that B is a two-form, but that's not actually a good general enough definition, because classically the real, well, the object of real interest is not B, but a three-form DB, which is which is some closed three-form. And classically, that's actually all we require from H. It's supposed to be closed, but it doesn't have to be exact. So in other words, B is actually only defined locally. In quantum theory, there are some additional constraints on B. So it should be sort of a connection on a gerb. Or if you define in the more down-to-earth terms, so B, well, what matters is not B, but sort of e to the IB, if you wish, which is a homomorphism from the group of two cycles on M to U1, such that on exact cycles, it's equal to the exponential, well, to the integral of the some free form h on this three chain alpha. So that's a general definition of the B field, and in particular, well, every B field defines some three form h. Whose periods are take values in 2 pi times integers. So, but there's slightly more information in the B field than in just in this three form. Okay, so given this data, one writes a sigma model, and then one can quantize it under favorable circumstances and get an N equals 1, 1 superconformal field theory. And the example where it's easy to do is the case when M is a torus. Let's say of even dimension, although for now it's not really important. And G is a flat metric, and B is just some constant two form. So in this case, one can explicitly do this quantization, and because it's a free field theory, and get some N equals 1 superconformal field theory. Now it turns out that we can, given such a N equals 1 supernormal field theory, one can produce, well, so to this geometric data, we can associate an N equals 1 supernormal field theory, but it turns out that this correspondence is not sort of one-to-one. So there are lots of inequivalent geometric data which lead to actually to isomorphic N equals 1 supernormal field theories, and we can generate all of them in the following way. So suppose this torus, so M is some vector space modulo a lattice gamma. So so suppose we have some isomorphism, well, some map from gamma plus the dual lattice to itself. So, and we impose additional condition that this map, this the map is 1-to-1, but also should preserve a natural symmetric pairing. Which I'll call little q on this lattice. So, and given such a map, one can generate another set of geometric data on the same torus, which which gives rise to an isomorphic n equals one superconformal field theory. And it turns out that it's convenient to instead of dealing with this data metric in the two form, it's convenient to package them in a somewhat different way. So let's introduce capital G, which is a composition of three matrices. So it's a symmetric bilinear form on the sum of V and V dual. Actually, it's a metric. It's positive definite. Because this matrix is a transpose of this one. So it turns out that under this maps, under this map F, G transforms very nicely, that is linearly. Namely, the new metric is simply is linearly related to the old metric, but this is a matrix on the double space. Okay. So so we can sort of go back from this G prime and recover, rewrite it in this form and get a new metric on the torus and the B field. And it's a well-known fact that this data produce an isomorphic n equals one superconformal field theory. So these transformations are called T dualities. So they form some orthogonal group because they preserve the symmetric pairing. Okay. Now, so on the other hand, so we can, now let's go back to, let's add some complex geometry in the game. So suppose we also have a complex structure here such that the metric is Hermitian with respect to it. So we should have a Kähler torus. And the B field is not constrained in any way for now. It can have a 1-1 piece and 0-2 piece. Then it turns out, in that case, it turns out one can not only associate an n equals one superconformal field theory, but actually n equals two superconformal field theory to the complex. Well, suppose we have also a complex structure. Then one can first get an 2,2 sigma model, and then 2,2 superconformal field theory. So again, I gloss over some quantum anomalies, possible quantum anomalies here, but in the case of torus, there's no quantum anomaly. Actually, this works only if the target space is a Calabi-Yau manifold, but so for now I'm just focusing on the case of torus. Now the problem is the following: that now we would like to understand how this structure transforms under T dualities. So, and it turns out that it doesn't. That is, if I start with this data and consider some isomorphism, consider some map like this, which I know induces isomorphism of n equals one superconformal field theories, then I can try to find a complex structure on the other, the prime complex structure, which is compatible with this metric, the new metric G prime and the new B field. This is a metric on the double space. You can rewrite the new metric, this guy in the same form, right? You can not rewrite it like this. And then read off the new metric, which is actually little g prime, and the new Biffy, which is b prime. Okay. So turns out that actually you cannot find any complex structure in general on the, well, which is compatible with this new metric g prime, so this makes it scalar, such that n equals 2, corresponding n equals 2 superconformal field theory is actually isomorphic. So the resolution of this problem is the following, that actually, even though the easiest way to get an n equals 2 superconformal field theory is to choose, is to deal with the Kähler manifold, actually there are more general possibilities. And this class of Kähler manifold is not invariant under these T dualities. So we're sort of forced to consider more general geometric structures and complex structures because if you want to deal with T dualities. And from my point of view, T dualities is just some transformation of the geometric data which preserves either n equals 1 or n equals 2 superconformal field theory associated to this data. So what is this geometric structure? Well, it turns out that the most general geometric structure which gives rise to n equals 2 sigma model is well known since, well, since the work of Gates, Hall, and Rochek in 1984. And it involves actually a pair of complex structures rather than one complex structure on M. Which satisfy the following conditions. First of all, G is Hermitian with respect to both. And second, the two complex structures are parallel with respect to connect some connections, but these are not the usual Levi-Civita connections. They differ from the Levi-Civita connections by some torsion piece. And this torsion is obtained just obtained by taking this three form H and erasing one index. Okay. So in particular, this means that actually if H is non-zero, then if you try to form Kähler forms, that is by, well, if you multiply g by I plus or I minus, you get some two form, but it won't be closed. Rather, the exterior derivative of these two forms is going to be a contraction of this three form H with these two complex structures. So it's not, this is not a Kähler manifold in general. So when H is zero, then you get actually Kähler structure, actually Kähler in two different ways to the two complex structures. That's the most general geometry, which leads to n equals 2 supersymmetry at, on the classical level. And then we can try to quantize it. And in the case of tori, it actually does work. In the case of tori, of course, H is zero, as I just said. But nevertheless, one can choose two, one in general deals with two different complex structures. The metric is Kähler with respect to both, and they're both parallel with respect to Levi-Civita connection. So it turns out that this data, I plus, I minus, they do transform, well, and the B field and the rest, they do transform nicely under T dualities. And this was shown by Christian Enkevort, and later, a few months later, by me, because I didn't know about Enkevort's paper. So, and the transformations are quite simple, similar to this one's. One can has to repackage this I plus and I minus, also the B field and the metric, in terms of two matrices, and then these two new matrices transform nicely, linearly under this map F. Okay. And actually, one doesn't need to deal with this capital G anymore because it can be recovered from these other two matrices, which involve I plus, I minus, the metric little g, and the B field. And this combination is actually quite remarkable. And this was the first hint that generalized complex structures play an important role in the string theory. So so the two complex structures are the following. So they're conjugations of the following things. So basically, you conjugate something with the same matrices, same matrix 1, 0, minus B1, but just its inverse. Where, so there are two matrices. So, let me first define the first one. And here, I tilde is the average of the two complex structures. Delta P is the half the difference of the inverse of the bivectors, which are the inverses of this two forms. So omega plus minus just G times I plus minus. So there are two forms, which would be Kähler forms in general. Well, in general, they're not Kähler forms because the exterior derivatives are not, I guess, expressed through H. In this case, they are Kähler forms. Actually, in this case, G is constant, I is constant, so they're obviously closed. So this is the difference of the Poisson structures corresponding to these two Kähler forms, and the omega is half the difference of omegas themselves. And this is the dual map. So one I tilde is a map from the tangent bundle to our torus to itself, and this is the map from the cotangent bundle to itself. So that's the first matrix, and the second one J, I call it curly J, is obtained from this curly I by replacing I plus, or I minus, minus I minus, and it's also omega plus, also omega minus to minus omega minus. So it has similar formula, just flip the sign of one of the complex structures. Okay. So now the properties of this two matrices are the following. First of all, they're both square to minus one, as can be easily checked. It all follows from the fact that, you know, this the metric G is Hermitian with respect to both I plus and I minus. And also we know, well, we can easily check also that they commute. So they're complex structures on the double torus, or the product of the torus and its dual. And also, we had also this form, symmetric bilinear form on the double torus times its dual, which in this block form looks like this. So and also they both preserve this form. So in other words, well, this defines some symmetric bilinear form on the tangent space of the our torus and of signature NN, and this means that actually Q is a pseudo Hermitian respect to either curly I or curly J. So, and this data, so this is actually precisely this axiom, it's just the algebraic part of the definition of a generalized Kähler structure. This additional integrability constraint there, but it's satisfied trivially in this case because everything is constant, all the matrices are constant here. So this show, well, so why is it natural to consider these particular combinations? It's because they transform linearly under t-dualities. So, that's how they transform, and then you can, you know, once you do the transformation, you can read off the new I plus, I minus, and B, and so forth, because actually that's the most general form you can imagine for matrices satisfying these constraints. So generally, complex structures transform linearly under this t-dualities. So F was our torus was a vector space mod gamma, and t-duality, it was parameterized by a map, an isomorphism, an automorphism of this lattice, of the lattice time that plots its dual, which preserved this form Q, symmetric integer valued form Q. So F was living in some O N. Well, I guess in my case, N was even, so maybe we should write it for it. N is the complex dimension of our torus. Okay, so this shows that it somehow physics becomes nicer once you use generalized complex structure instead of the, you know, this pair of complex structures I plus and I minus. So this also suggests that maybe they have some significance also in the general curve case. That is, when you have some non-flat metric on some arbitrary manifold, and they have also this H, freeform H, and the complex structures I plus and I minus are not scalar, that is, they're parallel specularist modified connections. So what is the significance of, well, indeed, one can be shown that generalized complex structures do play a very useful role in general as well. And that has to do with another problem. So problem B. So let M be a Calabi-Yau manifold. And by Calabi-Yau, I mean a manifold with a holomorphically trivial, compact manifold with a holomorphically trivial canonical class. So I don't require it to be simply connected. And also, you know, we also choose some scalar metric on it, scalar class at least. And a B field, which right now is going to be just going to have vanishing H. So it's going to be just some two form, some closed two form. So we have metric, we have complex structure, scalar class, and a closed two form. Now, this gives rise to some. This data gives rise to some n equals 2, comma 2 conformal field theory, which is very complicated. Actually, cannot be constructed in most cases explicitly, only in some large volume expansion. But one can define its truncation, which is a topological field theory, basically by taking the Hilbert space of this theory and taking cohomology of certain natural differential acting on it. And this gives some topological field theory, which is called the B model. This was defined by Witten in the late 80s. And the B model is topological field theory in two dimensions, which means that it's basically, roughly speaking, just a Frobenius algebra. That is a supercommutative algebra with a non-degenerate invariant inner product. And in this case, well, this algebra is just, it's just this one. Is the sum of all cohomologies of the exterior part of a holomorphic tangent bond. And it's clear why it's an algebra. Clearly, it's an algebra. It's a bit less clear, well, it's not as obvious why it's a Frobenius algebra. And the Frobenius structure is this one. So let me, instead of specifying the inner product of two elements in this Frobenius algebra, I'm going to specify, well, because of its invariance, it's the same as this, and so it's sufficient to consider this function, the trace function of the algebra. So it's defined as this. Then you can figure out what the inner product is, knowing the algebra structure. So, and the trace function is this. So trace of some alpha, where alpha is in is in the top cohomology. Well, otherwise it vanishes if it's not in the top cohomology. It's just it's obtained in this way. So we choose a holomorphic section of the canonical, or holomorphic trivialization of the canonical line bundle, which I should have excluded M. So there's X or M. I guess easy to change here. And so it's holomorphic, meaning that del bar of omega is zero. And then, well, this is some polyvector with values in the top forms of type zero N, so we can contract this polyvector with this form, we get form of type zero n, and then we wedge it with omega again, we get the top form, which can integrate over the whole X with the contraction. And that's the formula for the Frobenius trace. Okay, so that's the, on the other hand, we know that elements in this space actually correspond to infinitesimal deformations of the this B model. The particularly interesting ones are in degree two, that is if P plus Q is equal to two. It should correspond to deformations of the superconformal field theory as a superconformal field theory, that is, marginal deformations. And some of them are easily understood. So we have a piece like that, which is just parameterized infinitesimal deformations of the complex structure on X. And there is also a piece like this, where all is the structure sheaf, and these are just, this can be identified with H02 of X. So this just parameterizes deformations of the B field, or of the 02 part of the B field. One can show that the 1-1 part of the B field actually doesn't change anything as far as the B model is concerned. So this is just deformations of the B field, and but the last piece is a bit mysterious. There's also this space of sections on the second exterior powers of the bundle of holomorphic bivectors. So these are some, deformation in this direction, some bivector, and you know, it seems natural it seems reasonable to assume that actually this deformation corresponds to making the our manifold X non-commutative, that is somehow making the coordinates non-commutative, and the first order in the Planck constant, this non-commutative should be given by this bivector which we deform. Now, but that's sort of just a guess, and I would like to understand, first of all, how this deformation is realized on the level of the sigma model. That's what we should supposed to do with the action of the sigma model to deform in this direction. So, and the answer turns out to be the following. Well, it turns out that deforming in this direction just corresponds to making the two complex structures well, here we have just one complex structure. In other words, I plus is equal to I minus. In order to deform in that direction, you need to make them unequal. And the deformation in this direction turns out to be, well, some Poisson by vector. It turns out that it's just first order, just the difference of the two forms defined before. So now, and so second question, the direction is the following. Okay, so suppose we deformed our theory in this direction is by vector. So we get some new superconformal field theory, which starts with two unequal complex structures, I plus and I minus. And we would like to understand what sort of topological field theory we get. So here we got just cohomology of the exterior part of the tangent bundle. And so that's before deformation. After deformation, we get some new Frobenius algebra. We'd like to understand what it is. And second, we actually know that the B model is not the end of the story in the case of Calabi-Yau's. Actually, the B model, well, there's some bigger structure, namely the derived category of Cajurian sheaves on this manifold X. And this B model is simply the, is basically the Hochschild cohomology of this category, which sort of parameters the small deformation of this category. And we expect also that in the deformed case, in general case, when we have two unequal complex structures, also have some category of D-brains, we'd like to understand this category. So so this issue was addressed in two papers last year. One, well, the first one by me, and second by me and my student, where we studied this, my student Yi Li. So, maybe I have a heptage number. I don't have the temptation number here, so I leave it as an exercise, a homework problem to find the relevant paper. It's non-trivial because there's more than one paper with these authors. So, so let me formulate the answer. So I won't derive it, but I'll just formulate the answer. So I'm expected to produce some Frobenius algebra starting with this datum, some manifold X, pair of complex structures I plus and I minus, metric, which is Hermitian with respect to both of them, and some freeform H, which is closed. And this I plus and I minus are parallel with respect to some deformed Levi-Civita connection. And it turns out, well, that this generalized B model actually can be most neatly expressed if you use this repackaging of I plus, I minus, G, and the B field, well, which I introduced before. Actually, I don't only need B. So, we form again this curly I, so I'll just I'll set B to zero for now. So where again I tilde is just the average of the two complex structures, the plus and I minus, and this is the difference of the two corresponding two forms. And there's also another complex structure which is obtained by flipping on the sign of I minus. But actually, I won't need it, as it turns out, that in the end. That is, the B model seems to be insensitive to the other complex structure. So the point is actually that while the B model, in the usual case, is independent of the Keller form. It only depends on the complex structure and the B field. The analog of the statement in general seems to be that you have to repackage this data in terms of a pair of generalized complex structures, like this. Now, if you vary this one without changing this one, then the B model actually doesn't care. It's only sensitive to one generalized complex structure. So that's one of the uses of this change of variables from this data to this one. So it tells you which half of the data is unimportant. So all the answers are going to be formulated in terms of this single complex structure. We expect, again, to see some cohomology of some differential graded vector space. And the differentials will be somehow constructed from this curly I. So let me describe this construction, which is can be derived from physics. So there's some general construction. Well, most geometric constructions of complexes come from complexes. Well, there are some complexes of vector bundles with differential. Most of the geometric constructions come from Lie algebra, from a theory of Lie algebraics. So let me remind what it is. So if you look in some standard book on Lie algebraics, you'll find the following definition. So a Lie algebraic over X, a manifold X, is a vector bundle with a triple. Oh, it's actually a pair. Some vector bundle E, a map from E to the tangent bundle of X, it's a bundle map, and some Lie bracket on E. Lie bracket in the sections of E. Such that, A is a Lie algebra homomorphism and second, it's some sort of a Leibniz rule. For intersections of E, call S1 and S2, you can multiply one of them by a function, and compute this Lie bracket. And can be expressed through the Lie bracket of the sections times this function, and also through this map A. So this map A is called the anchor map. So the simplest example of a Lie algebraic actually is the tangent bundle itself, where the Lie bracket, well, the bracket is the usual Lie bracket on vector fields, and the anchor map is identity. That's just the usual Leibniz rule for the commutator. There are more interesting examples, and actually I'll need some slight generalization of this notion. I need a complex Lie algebraic, so I'll assume that E is actually mapped to the complexification of my tangent bundle, and the rest is the same. So the point is that given a Lie algebraic, one can immediately get some complex of vector bundles, some differential. We know that it's how it works in the case when E is the tangent bundle, because we have the bundle of differential forms associated to the usual Lie bracket on the vector fields. As you remember, yeah, we just heard recently, so the vector fields are like a man and the potential form like a woman. And actually here the symmetry is a bit, well, because this guy is a man, so should have corresponding woman, which is just the bundle, the exterior powers of the dual bundle E. And then there is some corresponding differential on it, which is some first order differential operator from this bundle itself, which increases the degree by one. Okay. So how do we define this guy? Well, it's not very obvious from this definition how we define it, but actually is a much nicer viewpoint on this Lie algebraoid business due to Weintraub. Well, so this is a really bad definition. And there's a better one, where it's immediate that there is some complex like that. And the definition is this one. So so here's a good definition. And the good definition is that the following. We recall that it's convenient to think about the differential forms on the manifold as functions on the total space of the some vector bundle with sort of fermionic fibers. So you can think of, instead of writing dxi, we write theta I, where theta I is a semantic imaging variable. So similarly here, we introduce, instead of working with E, we look, we take the total space of E and then reverse the parity of the fibers. So think of them as fermions, okay? So smooth function of this guy is the same as sections of this bundle just introduced, okay. So obvious, but it's just easier to think in these terms. And so then what is Lie algebraic structure? Well, it turns out that you can rephrase that definition the following way. So a Lie algebraic is a vector bundle. So, well, it's a super manifold. Of the form parity reverse vector bundle and plus an odd vector field. Oh, plus a degree one vector field. Q such that Q anticommutes with itself. So people call it homological vector. So so why it's the same thing? Well, is that definition? Well, because any such Q can be expanded in terms of some using some local choice of section. So if you choose a section, some local basis for E, you also have get set of sort of local coordinates on the fibers of this, sorry, on the fiber direction of this manifold. And you expand everything in this basis, that Q, well, then Q, well, let's call this coordinates psi mu, say. So then you can, well, since Q is a vector field, it can be expandable in terms of differentials, well, in terms of derivatives, and here derivatives of the bosonic coordinates, which parameter is the base of the supermanifold, these coordinates on X, and then there are fermionic ones, which are just leaving the fiber of E, so call them psi mu. And then you can just expand on this basis. And the most general thing you can write down, since this thing is supposed to be of degree one, and the fermionic coordinates is this one. Okay. And then you can check that this condition translates into some conditions on these guys and these guys, which are equivalent, well, and this condition actually can be reformed in that way, namely if you just say that this are the components of the anchor map, and these are the structure constants of this Lie algebra in this particular basis corresponding to this section, so you actually get the same conditions there. So so for this reason, you immediately see that this space is a differential graded vector space, where the differential is given by this action of this odd vector field. Okay. And in the case of when E is just the space, well, the tangent bundle of X, then you get the usual differential forms. And then, well, more generally get something else. In the case of the B model, we need this construction slightly more general case. So how do we get Lie algebraic from this data? So, well, we just consider well, I, because generalized complex structure, is the bundle endomorphism. The bundle endomorphism of the bundle TX plus TX star. So, just let E be the kernel or the subbundle of curly I with eigenvalue minus I, plus I, sorry, the kernel of this map. So E is going to be the subbundle of this bundle defined by the condition that curly I takes eigenvalue plus I. And then we form this bundle. Well, why it's Lie algebraic? Well, you see, on this bundle, we had some strange bracket called the Courant bracket, which Marco explained yesterday. It wasn't a Lie bracket. It turns out that it does become a Lie bracket when it's restricted to this bundle. So it does descend because, you know, this I was supposed to be integrable. And the integrability just means that this guy is closed with respect to the Lie bracket, this Courant bracket. But on this subbundle, the Courant bracket becomes the usual Lie bracket. That comes from the fact that I preserves that symmetric bilinear form Q. So actually, we do get a Lie algebraic. Well, I didn't say what the anchor map is. Well, since it's a subbundle of this guy, the anchor map is simply a projection on the first factor, or rather than its complexification. So that's a very simple construction. We get some Lie algebraic. Complex Lie algebraic. We just take this cohomology. And the claim is that the B model as an algebra is simply the cohomology of the vector space with respect to the differential is DL, okay? So, in the special case when the two complex structures are the same, you can easily check this bundle E. Some examples. Well, suppose I plus is equal to I minus. Sorry? Who is complex? L? This one? It's generalized complex structure, so it's an endomorphism of the sum of tangent cotangent. Right. Well, 0, 1. Yeah. Let me just explain this example. So this is, we can't register the bar in general, but in the case when I plus is equal to I minus, this generalized complex structure, curly I, is just has this form. Okay. And then this E is simply holomorphic tangent bundle plus the bundle of one forms of type. I guess maybe that were okay. Okay, no, that's good. So plus the bundle of one from the type 0, 1. Okay. So and in this case, this DL just becomes usual del bar on the sections of this holomorphic. On the exterior powers of this guy. So you get recover the usual result for the B model. In general, it's, you know, there's no simpler definition than this one in general. So there's another special case. Let's look at the case again of a Kähler manifold that is H is 0, but let's take I plus equal to I minus. So in that case, this curly I becomes expressible through the symplectic structure on our manifold, and this guy is simply isomorphic to the complexified, well, the complexified tangent bundle of X. So in this case, you get the Lie algebraic cohomology, simply the cohomology, the usual Derham cohomology, or complex Derham cohomology. So in general, you get this complicated Lie algebraic thing. Well, not that complicated. And obviously, this guy has an algebra structure, which is wedge in this sections of the exterior power bundle. And the remaining question is, what about the Frobenius structure? And so if you remember, the Frobenius structure dependent, in the B-model case, dependent on the choice of some homomorphic trivialization of the canonical line bundle. So to define the algebra structure, you don't even need to know that your manifold is a Calabi-Yau. You can work with an arbitrary complex manifold. To define this Frobenius structure, you need to assume that your manifold is a Calabi-Yau. Same happens here. So actually, to do these computations, you can define this algebra physically as the CC ring of a supercomplexed field theory without assuming that it's a Calabi-Yau manifold or some generalized version of a Calabi-Yau manifold. So, but if you want to find some Frobenius structure, some invariant inner product, you have to assume something else about the manifold. And let me explain what it is. So Marco mentioned it briefly yesterday. So well, there are two conditions actually. So to get Frobenius trace, we need some analog of Calabi-Yau condition in the case of tronical complex structures and some H flux. And people use the word Calabi-Yau in a different sense sometimes. Sometimes they say that the Calabi-Yau condition is either say that the C1 of X is zero, or they say that canonical line bundle is holomorphically trivial. And the first condition means that the canonical line bundle is topologically trivial, of course, this condition is stronger in general. Well, when people consider a simply connected manifold, it doesn't make any difference, because on a simply connected manifold, this implies that, but it's not so easy in general. So, and also, we may be interested in non-simply connected Calabi-Yau, so the actual condition is this one. If you just have, well, to be precise, actually, this has to. So, and actually, here also, strictly speaking, it should be the square of the canonical line bundle, which is supposed to be holomorphically trivial. Okay. But anyway, so this is the right condition in general, because to write down the formula for the Frobenius trace, we need this holomorphic trivialization of the canonical line bundle. And if we don't have it, we just don't have the formula. We don't have topological field theory. So what is the analog of this? Well, we need to find the analog of this condition. But let me first write down the analog of this condition, because it's easier. So it's the topological analog of the generalized Calabi-Yau condition. And this condition is, well, quite obviously, it should be something like this. So incidentally, well, this can be derived physically as a condition for vanishing of the anomaly in the R charge on the world sheet. And that's quite obvious to experts why this is the condition. And just note that in the case when I plus is equal to I minus, you get that. So you just, this C1 one because of the manifold x with the complex fractor I plus, and this one with the manifold x with complex fractor I minus. On the other hand, when I plus is equal to minus I minus, you get no condition at all. That's because when I plus is equal to minus I minus, remember that, so for I plus equal to minus I minus, our generalized B model was actually the same as the A model, the usual A model. So the usual A model, you can see, for example, from the fact that in that case, curly I was simply, well, only dependent on the symplectic form. So in that case, of course, you don't need the Calabi-Yau condition to define the A model, and you can see it from here. So in general, we have this condition, and sort of constraints here, I plus and I minus. So what is the analog of the real condition, which is stronger than this one? So to see this, we need to well, so far I only given the generalized complex structure, I defined some Lie algebroid and the corresponding cohomology, but actually it also leads to some interesting another interesting complex, which is generalization of the Dalbo complex on differential forms. So the algebraic cohomology is generalization of the Dalbo complex on the sections of exterior powers of the tangent bundle, and there's also a generalization of the Dalbo complex. And we just use the fact that so we have this space of forms on X, and let's drop the usual grading because it won't be relevant at all. And we grade in a different way. So our bundle E, which is the kernel of the, well, which is eigenbundle of the generalized complex structure, acts on this bundle of forms via the spinner representation, as Marco explained. And so let U not be the eigenbundle of E with, well, let be the subbundle of bundle of forms annihilated by the whole E. One can show it's a line subbundle. So, and actually, and then you can decompose the bundle of forms into line bundles. So find the number of them equal to the twice the complex dimension of your manifold, well, twice the dimension of your manifold, which I forgot how to denote it, so I erased it. So you get this decomposition of the line bundles, and that's, and U1, you just act on elements of U0 by elements of, so, of E dual, and you get to U1. If you act once, you get here. If you act twice, you get to U2, and so forth. There's a new grading on forms, defined using this action of spinner, via the action of E on space of forms via the spinner representation. And this topological condition just formulated turns out to be equivalent to the condition that this bundle, U0, is actually trivial, is topological line bundle. And the condition, and it turns out that this, one can also decompose the usual Durham differential into the piece, well, can just decompose in terms of pieces of degree one and degree minus one in this grading. The piece of degree one is a little del bar E. And that's the analog of the Dalbo decomposition. And this analog of the Calabi-Yau condition is simply that there should exist a section called capital omega, gamma of U0, such that del bar omega is equal to del bar E omega is equal to zero. is then the Calabi-Yau condition. And that satisfied, you write a formula, you can write a formula for the Frobenius trace. So you get a Frobenius algebra structure on the Lie algebraic cohomology in the special case. So I was also going to talk about the category of D-brains in this generalized B model, but I don't have time for that. Just say two things. First of all, both the usual B model and A model are just special cases of this. So it's an interesting formula because it sort of, in principle, should allow a unified treatment of the both the derived category of coherent sheaves and the Fukai category. Second, it's actually pretty hard to define what you mean by the category of D-brains in this case. I just have a bunch of examples, which correspond to just submanifolds in X and line and the line bundle on them. It has some constraints on the geometry of the submanifold and the line bundle, which is the usual B model reduced just to the requirement that the submanifold is a complex submanifold and the line bundle is holomorphic. But in general, there's some rather complicated condition on the submanifold plus the line bundle. It's not clear at all how to form category from these objects. We know that actually it should be rather non-trivial because the case of A model is already rather non-trivial. There have some Lagrangian or coisotropic submanifold with some line bundles, and then this Lagrangian submanifold, the right notion of a morphism is provided by the Fourier homology, which is rather non-trivial construction. And it's not clear how to generalize this to this generalized complex case. So I'll stop here. Yes? Yeah. No, it has to, yeah, right. So, in principle, I mean, yeah, so this situation, well, in the usual case, in principle, this situation have two complex structures has nothing to do with the deformations of the complex case, right? Because this three-form H may have an non-trivial cohomology class. But in the special case, when this generalized complex structure is a deformation of the ordinary complex structure, yeah, we of course expect that it's, you know, the same. It just follows from the axiom of topological field theory, basically. Like, well, I actually don't know how to prove it, but I expect it to be true in the case of when the generalized complex structure is a deformation of the complex structure. In general, I don't know. This is a special case when this generalized complex structure is block upper triangular. So that's when it has structure like this. So these blocks in this case must be complex structures. And this block must be Poisson by vector of type 2,0 plus 0,2. So in that case, apparently, this category of generalized D-brains is very closely related to the category of non-commutative deformed category of D-brains, deformed using this bivector. I don't know how to argue it in general, but in case of tori, there's actually an explicit map between generalized holomorphic line bundles and holomorphic line bundles and non-commutative deformation of the torus. So it's in my first paper on the subject, so you can check it out. In general, I'm not sure. I don't think it's true in general when you have when I is general, when you have blocks, non-zero blocks everywhere. But even in the case when I is like that, that's currently I, but the manifold is more general than a torus, I'm not sure what the connection with non-commutative deformation is. Should be some. General, what's it? Yeah, should be some quantum corrections to this answer, which I stated this, in general, the quantum corrections to this answer is the algebraic cohomology. And there's some general notion of generalized holomorphic map. So, which computes in principle, well, whenever you have some non-trivial generalized holomorphic maps, you also have some quantum corrections to the sensor I said. So there should be some analog of this Gromov-Witten theory for generalized complex manifolds. For generalized complex manifolds, which also generalized Calabi-Yaps. Well, in that case, there's no invariant measure in the twisted path integral. So it's some sort of anomaly. So there's no measure on the fermionic zero modes in that case, which is Bierstein invariant. In the physical theory, it just means that you have no ground states in the Ramon sector. This is a spontaneously broken supersymmetry. Yeah.